Welcome, listeners. I'm Justin Makarevich, Deputy Director of Employer and Recruiter Relations at the Ziflin School of Business of Baruch College. Thanks for tuning in to this episode.
Welcome, everybody. It is Thursday, February 22nd, 2024. Excited to have our alum, Laura Lacawar, from the full-time MBA class of 2014, talking about applications and networking from a hiring manager's perspective. Really eager to have this conversation and this discussion with our students and even alums. Laura, thank you so much for the time, for putting this together. I'm going to hand it over to you and we'll get discussion going as well. So without further ado, Laura, take it from here.
Fantastic. So everyone, thank you so much for attending today. Really nice to meet you all. So today I'm going to give you a perspective of the hiring manager. These are things that I wish I knew when I was in your shoes. These are things to give you just a bit of perspective, understand what's happening and how you can actually optimize and increase your conversations, your networking, and actually getting into the interview process. So I look forward, if you have questions, write them down, add them to the chat. We'll have time towards the end to go over those things. So getting started, I first just wanted to give you insight. This picture I found just cracked me up. I look like I'm 16. I'm actually 29 here. I'm naive. I'm young. I'm like ready to take on the world. And there was so much I didn't know. And what I gave to you on the left-hand side is a bit of a CV, and it's not doesn't have all the detail. And what I think is interesting actually is not all the actual line items of this CV, but the fact is that these are all the skills I actually took away from this time. And this is the storytelling. So when I tell my story, there's two kind of distinct sections, the before the MBA where I'm doing events and marketing, I'm doing a ton of stuff where I'm building my organizational skills, my project management, I'm in communications, problem solving. So when I'm coming to the MBA, I have a really strong set of skills that kind of translate to those types of roles. However, I'm using Baruch as an entire pivoting point. So then I only spend like a very short amount of time whenever I introduce myself on that period of time, because what gets really exciting when I introduce myself is actually the latter half. Baruch allowed me to completely do a career pivot and I entered the tech industry. I did that by actually interviewing and going to the Black MBA conference. Those conferences were key for me to network, practice my interviewing, meet people. And it actually wasn't an interview there. It was a networking. I met one of the recruiters for the sales organizations at IBM. But during this time, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't have a clear path. I didn't fit in the typical kind of lane of finance, and potentially consulting management and some of these other fields that are traditional MBA. But I did know I wanted to study finance. I did know I wanted to study information systems. And the last few takeaways that I would just highlight here is that there are things in this second half that I could have never imagined happening. You'll notice in 2017, I have a startup listed. This was the first time I went to a like 20-person startup. I didn't know how to vet startups at the seed stage. And within 3 months, we both on both sides knew it was the wrong fit. This happens all the time, especially in the tech industry or you're looking at early stage companies. So that was something that 3 months we exited, we ended that, and it allowed me to end up going to SoftBank and building an entire team and experience from the ground up. But that never would have happened if I hadn't gone through that experience. And at the time it felt terrible. The second thing I'd highlight is that, I laid myself off in 2020 as the manager of a team. I had certain headcount when we downsized by 60%. I had reached my kind of pinnacle to the top of what I thought I could do at SoftBank. And this allowed someone to stay with the company because I exited myself out. And that was a personal choice I made. And then finally, this last year, in 2023, I was leading a team as director of customer success for healthcare and life sciences at UiPath. And for personal reasons, I chose to actually take a sabbatical. And so what my purpose of sharing all this with you is that I've had a lot of twists and changes, a lot of growth, getting to lead and manage and do the things I want to do. But then there's been a lot of surprises, a lot of lateral, things that felt three steps ahead, two steps back, you know, all those types of things. And I think what is most important is that you're thinking just about that next step. That's all. You don't have to worry about the full scope always, the five-year plan. And then my favorite thing right now is that I'm consulting for an MBA. A colleague that I was a student with, he has a company called Soapbox, and I get to, you never know with your MBA colleagues and students who you might meet and what might happen later on. Now let's dive into this topic. Can you all raise your hand physically, throw up the digital? Who here has experienced ghosting, a position put on hold, auto-generated rejections, just a terribly long interview process? Like, I'm seeing it. We've all been there. And one of the things I wanted to emphasize here is that it feels very personal. It feels terrible. But what you'll find is that not only will we all experience this, but in the future state, we will experience this. And what I want to emphasize here is that oftentimes it's not about you. It is about them. And I say that kind of is, yeah, we can have bad interviews. Hey, we could have just kind of where it's just not the right fit. But so often there is a bigger story happening. And I want to provide you that insight because I had no clue about this when I was in your shoes. So this happens because you've already heard this, I'm sure, but there are thousands of applicants right now. You have people that aren't qualified. They're overqualified. They're underqualified. You have all types of people applying, and that is just a lot as a hiring manager to go through and be able to sift through. And that also means that that's why auto-generated rejections happen. That's why these systems look for keywords, because you have to get yourself to a pool of like 30 applications to be able to even review in detail. There's no way you're going to see all these. This leads to hiring via the path of least resistance. As a hiring manager, if someone could refer me from my team, from the company, from my network, I built those things so I could have great referrals and great people. One of the odd things is that I always felt pressure as a hiring manager, and I will always probably, that the candidates represent top tier candidates. I've already vetted them. And so I never want the candidate to be embarrassed. I never want to be embarrassed by what happens. I want them successful because I'm trying to hire the best person for that role. And so that's why network, you know, referrals happen. And that's why people go to those easy ways to find those people. It is shockingly difficult to build a strong candidate pool. Now, I've been hiring in the customer success world and in the tech industry. Even then, to get a diverse pool, to get people, I got into AI technologies, which really narrows people's kind of expertise. And there's a lot of people that have interesting backgrounds that I would love to speak to that could apply that might not apply. And I wanted to highlight the quote to the right. What's really important here is that just understanding, I took this quote about the tech industry. I think every industry has been hit by this: consulting, finance, retail, consumer goods. Everyone has been having the same issue. Oftentimes, HR is a big place that gets hit. In tech alone, even if it's 10 to 20% reduced, 50% of that 10 to 20% was recruiters impacted. What that means is that not only do you not have a team of people to help you get the best candidates, but that also means the coordination of interviews and the scheduling, everything is delayed, and the hiring manager ends up overemphasizing networking to try to fill the pool so they get a diverse set of candidates and can round out their team. And just for numbers sake, the recruiter I partnered with at UiPath, he had 17 to 20 roles he was filling at a time. That's how much work. So if you imagine 17, 20 roles you have to fill and all the coordination, that's where ghosting can happen. That's where things can fall through the cracks. And then finally, I just want to highlight the company changes. One of the things that I never understood was, and that's because I hadn't been in a management role prior to going through the MBA, is that the number of company changes that happen from a standpoint of just headcount. If someone leaves the company, a lot of times you only have a window to backfill that role. And so sometimes that meant like 2 months, the rest of the quarter, but it was never a long time, because if that budget could be pulled somewhere else, you have other people fighting for that. You also have hiring freezes, and they don't ever align with kind of your individual hiring goals and plans. So if you have an open role, you could lose that because of a company-wide hiring freeze. And then additionally, I have it in a scenario where I had 3 weeks to hire. The role opened back up. It was good in line with the budgeting and the quarter, and I had to rush candidates through. Fortunately, I had a pipeline already ready and people kind of in the waiting if that happened. But those are the type of things that I think from the other side that you don't get to see. And once again, when things are happening, it can feel super personal. But it oftentimes, once again, isn't just about you personally and your performance in that process. So what can you do about this? I put together kind of some, I would say, truths and mantras, things to just tell yourself and plan on. I know you've heard this exhaustively, but what this means is I will network. And why that is so important and how that looks like, that means joining communities that exist virtually or in person in New York City. There's a lot of organizations. I'm a part of customer success. I'm a part of go-to-market sales to customer success communities. I'm going to get into this in more detail, but I regularly attend webinars. I regularly attend meetups, things, and I will continuously do that through my career to offer help, to answer questions, to mentor, to get mentored, all of those things. The next thing is building towards a referral. A referral is a very personal ask, and you need to have that long-term rapport for someone to place you in. And the referral, based on those numbers of applicants, you have to have that. It is almost, I would say it's probably 95% unlikely that just through an application without a referral that you would get through to a close of a job opportunity. And why I think this is so important is that most companies will pay employees a stipend to refer in. So if you successfully hire and that person stays a length of time, that person will get money in. And what I really want to emphasize is that because of these systems that exist on the back end, you want that referral first. What you don't want to have happen is, hey, I applied. Can you refer me in? And then the system auto rejects you. It takes multiple steps to get you back into the possible candidate pipeline. So ask first what the process is to get referred, when you're asking for that referral, and then add in kind of those details. The next thing is, I will invest in my success. This is very hard. You all are very busy. And I want to emphasize that you practice your star stories. You have your questions prepped. You have your transferable skills. Many of you are probably changing careers. You want to have those ready. And one of the things that was very hard, obviously, out of COVID and has continued is that you typically have 30-minute calls, maybe 45 minutes. You essentially have 20 minutes to tell your story and how you are the best candidate for that position. It's a very short amount of time. You also then only have a few minutes to ask maybe two questions. You have to be ready. You have to know why you want to work at that company, and you have to have why you're the best candidate. And then finally, treat every experience as an opportunity. You're planting seeds continuously. People remember meeting you, and it's a full journey. And so what I want to emphasize here is that it has many phases. Just because you're rejected for this specific role doesn't mean that you might not be fit for another role on the team or something else opens up later. Doesn't mean that you might be a fit for another totally different role and team within the company. People want to hire great people. And so follow up and be kind and kind of spend the time to send the thank yous and follow up with people, because you just never know when that might lead to something else later down the line. So I want to get into the networking piece, because I have always gotten my jobs through networking and referrals, and I spent a lot of time doing this. What I've copied here is a community called Pavilion, and Pavilion is a paid-for community. These types of communities can range from a couple $100 a year all the way to the thousands, where executives might actually get support from their company and sponsor their membership, because the communities are places where you can find people to hire. You can obviously network. There's job opportunities. There's virtual coffees. You can take online courses. This community, for example, has a chief customer officer and a chief revenue officer online class. I've done these classes. It's improved my expertise in my field. I've gotten mentoring, coaching. I got a job offer through Pavilion and referral through Pavilion at UiPath. So these things are important. And what you're seeing here very quickly is that every week they're highlighting local events. They're talking about updates about the community. There's episodes. There's member shout outs. And more importantly, when you get into it, you can see right here on the left-hand side all the different types of chapters that exist. You can get your local chapter and communicate through there. I'm a part of a chief customer officer channel. So people, you know, ask questions. Like, this is a question on how are you paying, you know, your team, incentivizing them. You can add expertise in ways and build rapport and your branding through these communities. And then more importantly, there's hiring opportunities. This is a really easy way for hiring managers to post a job opportunity and trust that the referrals and network of this community are going to be strong. This is would be better than LinkedIn. Of course, you're going to have the public LinkedIn, but when I posted here, I've gotten really good referrals and talent put through because it's an already vetted community. So finally, really quick, just two more slides. I know this is a lot and I'm excited for your questions, but I wanted to actually give you examples of notes I've sent and I've received. These notes and communications are really essential. So it's important to research the position. I'm sorry, the person. So if you want to talk to a hiring manager, you want to talk and network to alumni, what do they write about? What are they speaking about? What do they network? Take some time to research that person. You do not have to. I might message one new person every couple months. You don't need to be exhaustive with a lot of breath. You need to be focused and targeted, and that research spends the time. Send a note when you connect on LinkedIn, especially with alumni. Of course, they're going to accept. But why should they accept? You know, what are you about? What are you looking to do? And you can send, like, I really appreciate what you're speaking about contributing to the customer success community. I love these. Just wanted you to know that I would love to connect on LinkedIn. And then later on, I sent a note that said, hey, would you be available for 30 minutes? I appreciate your leadership. I want to go beyond a LinkedIn connection and just get to know you. It doesn't always have to be really detailed, but these are the type of notes that I sent. And you can see, like, even on the far right, he sent, you know, can you just spend 15 minutes? And we interviewed him to the end. It didn't work out as a fit for UiPath, but this was an example of someone reaching out to me for a hiring manager. And so you want to highlight, why do you want to talk? 30 minutes. Talk, say you want to learn about the company, their role, their team and structure, or how did you navigate getting hired out of MBA, things like that. Make it super easy. Reduce the back and forth on available times. Oftentimes, people have online booking tools like Calendly. They might have assistants. Try to suggest times. Offer to book on their tools. Make it as easy as possible. I always am grateful when people do that, and I try to lend the same to others. And then when you have a conversation, be curious, be ready with questions, provide your quick pitch on yourself, and then launch into it so that you can learn and get the most out of the conversation, whether it is 15 or 30 minutes. And then you'd be surprised how much you have to offer. And when you ask the question, if there's anything I can help you with, is there any goals you have for 2024? You never know when people might need referrals for their teams. They might be hiring in a future state. They might themselves be looking to network and look for job opportunities, introductions, things of that nature. And those are the things that you can help with. And I've been shocked by the times when I've been able to help, you know, highlight posts on LinkedIn, celebrating people, speaking opportunities, what they're doing. There's a lot you can do for people. And then always close with like something that is easy and tangible. Can you introduce me to one more person in X field? Or do you have someone at this company, you know, or I looked in your LinkedIn connections, would you be open to this? That's an easy way to keep the kind of spreading of kind of seeds throughout your network and growing. And then one of the things I just remember talking to one MBA student is I used to send like $10 gift cards to Starbucks if I didn't get to take them out for coffee as just a nice gesture. You don't have to do this, but sometimes if people have given you extra help, a nice just gesture can go a long way. So let's go to this. These are things to remember. Go to the GCMC, get help. I had a lot of help on my resume. I spent a lot of time practicing interviewing. I did get their help, and I did get help from other people just testing me and going through that process. Persistence is a value add. Send the thank you notes, follow up with no response. Assume good intentions. A lot of times, again, it's not about you, and people, I'd say probably 98% of the time, people want not only their company and teams to be successful, but they want you to be successful. Remember to be kind and just make things easier on those that are kind of hiring. Remember that you have each other. Help and champion each other. A lot of times when I was in MBA, we would always be passing around, wait, this isn't a good fit for me. Maybe this is a good fit for so-and-so. And then each other, you guys are busy. You can create accountability and support each other through what can be such a very busy time. Something that's just something to recommend, track your efforts so you remember who and what. I highlight this is that I always have spreadsheets because I can't remember and track everyone. And this is a good thing to go back to and then say, you know, 6 months later, hey, guess what? This is what I'm doing. Or, you know, just sharing and continuing to ask, hey, checking in on you. What's going on in your world this year? It goes a really long way. And these small seeds you're planting, they'll just lead to shocking results. I've had so many things happen, including now working for my friend Danny. That's, you know, 10 years later that you never know. And then finally, a hiring manager is trying to find the right fit for the team and company. It really is in your best interest. Those no's are a good thing. And it's just something to keep in mind when it's feeling a little rough out there. So thank you so much. And any questions, I'll open it up now.
Fantastic. Laura, thank you so much. Everybody, if please use the raise hand feature so that we can have a queue. We want to encourage you to also introduce yourself and your program, maybe even like a little bit about why you came. But I wanted to kick it off just really quickly, Laura. Can you share with us why you created this presentation or what the genesis of the idea was? Like, where was this really stemming from?
That's a really good question. I think what's hard about the marketplace today is that we're going to experience through our careers changes anywhere. It could be in a year. It could be in 5 years. But it's very easy to feel down, lose your confidence. I still have that happen sometimes when we get ghosted and things are like, how could they not respond to me? I'm so great. Like, it's a thing that I think I didn't understand, and I'm still continuing to coach myself through of how to go about this process. And the no's are hard, and you have to move yourself through that. I really like Ted Lasso, and no matter what you think of that, being a goldfish and a memory of a goldfish as an example on the team, when things aren't going your way or things keep the momentum going, shift. And that's what I want to provide you all, is that there's a bigger picture, and don't take it out on yourself. Keep your confidence and your positivity and optimism going.
I love that. I also just really appreciate, you know, it's one of those things too, where things can feel in a job search, a networking opportunity, whatever, things can feel very myopic in the sense of like, like you were saying, like, why aren't they reaching out to me? This is so frustrating. I'm so great. And having some empathy on the other side of the priorities that the individuals on the receiving end get is, while sometimes doesn't help, it's good to have that as a reality check of, it's not about me. It's really about their competing priorities. So I appreciate that. But I'm going to hand it over. We've already got a queue of people so excited. So Aditya, why don't you take us out of the gate? Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin. I want to first of all thank you, Laura, for being here. You're sharing very good tips here, and your experience really helps us learn a lot. I am doing my master's in real estate. I'm in my first semester over here, now, of course, starting my second semester. I have a question, which is that when let's say a position opens up and you get to know about it, it might not be that you have a strong network already in that company, and so you're reaching out to somebody who's working in there. Now, how do you navigate the timeline, as in getting their response, getting a conversation, maybe meeting them, keeping in mind that every day hundreds of applications are pouring in, and you got to keep up with that?
Understood completely. I think you can be pretty direct. And a good example that copy I did. Now he had reached out pretty clearly along the line that the position was posted. He was less direct, but he ended up contacting, and I balanced this. He ended up talking to probably 10 people by time he was midway at UiPath. And what I love about using that as an example is that I think sometimes finding people in the position, you don't always have to go the hiring manager and be like, hey, I'm curious about this. I really want to be strong and get an opportunity to get the HR interview. Now, mind you, he was targeting a role that was deliberately deliberately focused on, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought. Give me 2 seconds. He was focusing on a role that was targeted for his background. So that also helps. I think the key piece there is being direct, and you might get a couple no's, but you just reach out and say, hey, I see this opportunity. Would you spend 15 minutes for me? Can we talk? I am looking to get referred in. I'd love to share about why you should refer me in. Something like that.
Okay. I have two quick follow-ups. I know there's a long queue. Just two quick follow-ups. Is it okay if I am talking to like multiple people in this for the same position in the company? Because when I'm initially reaching out after getting to know about the application opening up, I'm reaching out to, let's say, 5 people, and I don't know who will respond. So when as an HR, you get to know that I've been reaching out to 5 people. So does that portray a okay situation? Does that portray a good situation for me?
I think that's fine. I think that's fine. I think the one caution I would give is that I would do like 3 and under. Like, I would have a cap to that, because it is, what is funny about this is that then the reverse happens, and all of a sudden, sometimes the hiring manager gets like 6 people that's like, hey, did you know this person is reaching out, this person? And then you start calculating the cost that person is taking of the company to all share their experiences. And so you want to optimize. And the truth of the matter is, as a hiring manager, if I have someone that's met with every person on my team already, that's a hard thing, because while the initiative's great, you want to not exhaust resources. Just enough to get you through the finish line to the first step, which is the hiring manager. I'm sorry, the recruiter.
Okay. Thank you. The second one is that I've been told that sometimes reaching out to the HR right after you're putting in your application is not good because they're already overwhelmed, and this is a review directly from the recruiter itself. So what are your thoughts about that?
Say it one more time.
I've been told by the HR person who was recruiting for the job that it's not good that you're reaching out right after you're putting in your application, trying to get in a conversation, because they're already overwhelmed with a lot of applications. So that really confused me. So I would like to know your thoughts.
So are you reaching out to the recruiter?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. The recruiter themselves is overwhelmed. Like, they're filling, like, imagine filling 15 to 20 roles and then you got hit with probably at least 20 LinkedIn, 40 LinkedIn messages per role, especially if you publicly know that you're a recruiter. So I would say the recruiter is overwhelmed. The hiring manager is likely overwhelmed. That doesn't mean the team and the hiring, it doesn't mean the hiring manager might not, you might hook that person at the right time.
Okay.
And that's one person's opinion. Maybe you might find an HR recruiter that's like, yeah, great, let's talk. I think for every person that says a no, you might find a company and team who would be open to that. So no might not be a blanket for everybody, but I would say that that's probably general. The HR recruiters, they are slammed. That role specifically, they're struggling to manage.
Thank you, Alicia.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the question that it did. Elise, you're next.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for meeting today. I love that you shared your background. That helps a lot. I'm also doing a career pivot. I currently was in fashion, and now I'm at Baruch for a master's in finance. A question I wanted to ask was, it's a little overwhelming. There are so many different roles that are sometimes at networking events or anything with the school that they're trying to fill. How, when you're super new to finance, for example, do you look for roles? Like, how do you narrow down roles that might be a good fit for you?
I think it's spending some time evaluating, and this was for me, strengths. I was studying finance to further my education and ability to speak to it, do it, all those things. However, my skill sets, and I'm very open with this, is that I will never be an analyst. I will never go down the route of actually, you know, a finance into banking. And it took me a while to get there. So to be fair, it took me a while to figure out and accept that that's not the direction I wanted to head. And that was my journey. So I think what I'd recommend is looking at your skill sets, looking how that applies to where you want to head and what those roles are. The faster you narrow your scope, the better, because you can speak to it. You can become an expert to it. And it took me also a long time. I was looking at venture capital. I was looking at startups. I had a very far, and I was in tears and like struggling, because I'm like, this doesn't exist. I don't know how to do this. And I felt very lost through that period. But the way to do that is to actually narrow in on what you want to be in the world, where you're doing what you're great at and you're excited at. So you need to find that portion of that quadrant. You don't want to be in a quadrant where you're great at something, but you hate it. You don't want to be not good at it, but you're passionate about it. So figuring that out and spending time with yourself, spending time with GCMC counselors, like spending the time to figure that out and narrow on some target companies where you want to work, then narrow on the roles. Like, that's the best way to speed up the time, in my opinion. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that's super helpful, because I think just being new to any industry, any type of career path, it's when you're new, you're kind of open to everything, and it's really important to like narrow down. Otherwise, you could be applying for like hours and hours a day.
Yeah, you don't want to be doing that, because then you're like tailoring, then you're preparing for it. It's too much. And I think the second thing is that's why those one-on-one conversations with alumni or people within your network are so important, because it's good to learn. And I never thought I would have entered sales. that was not on my radar, and it wasn't until I started speaking about this program that IBM offered. And I never would have considered that if I didn't try for the internship at Colgate. And all these things opened up my eyes to what is an opportunity through experiences and talking to other people. But I would say the Colgate piece was a big one for me that helped me along that path as well.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Elise. Serena, you're next.
Thank you so much for this event. My name is Serena. I've been working as a paralegal for 5.5 years, but I'm very excited to be accepted to Baruch's MBA accountancy program, which I will start in the fall. My question is, given that, Laura, you actually did an MBA, I wonder how you actually leverage the 2 years that you had in the program to actually help you set yourself for success in terms of internship as well as going forward. Thank you.
Sure. I felt like an underdog. So I've always been very gritty. I moved from St. Louis, Missouri to New York City. The financial crisis hit right after I moved and had a job. And to get that said job, I did fib that I already lived in New York City. I was like, I can move tomorrow. Like, so to even get that interview. So like, I've been very aggressive and gritty. And I think why I share that example is that for Colgate-Palmolive, I was showing up at any internship opportunity to meet the recruiters, talk to them, and working with GCMC to actually get my conversation ready to be hired for that type of internship. That's number one. Number two, I was attending events when I could, both at Baruch. I was the president of MBA Association. You don't have to do that specifically, but I think taking a leadership role, one of my favorite things to do was actually bringing in speakers to Baruch or into a virtual setting. Like, that's a great way to provide an offer to someone and create an opportunity. People love talking to Baruch students, and there's a great network of people. That was something I was doing. I obviously can't emphasize enough those MBA conferences if you can get to one. And just picking, you can just pick one because I know it's an expense. That was a big thing. But I spent the time and I sacrificed the time to figure out where I could meet people. I even volunteered at networking events to run the check-in. Like, you know, some of these events are thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars. Ask if you can volunteer at the check-in and attend the event as a benefit. Ask if you can get a student rate for things. There are student rates on everything. So that is how I spent my time. I did ask for one-on-ones a lot just to learn about people. I did ask for referrals from the professors to meet people from GCMC. Who do you know in your network that does this? So I did spend the time. I did track the efforts. Once again, I set metrics for myself because I knew going from events and marketing, I did not have a leg up in terms of my experience and background. So resilience, grit, pushiness, all those things.
Thanks, Serena. Idris, you're next.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, thank you. I want to say thank you, Laura, for your presentation. It was really informative. I'm actually a MS in finance student at Baruch Zicklin School of Business. I'm trying to I'm supposed to graduate hopefully within January 2025. So in after the fall semester, that's when I'm supposed to graduate. My question is, what advice would you have for somebody who's trying to break into entry-level positions in kind of the corporate banking field? I've had some difficulty with it because I was a little late. Personal story, I started applying in September of basically 2023, in September 2023, and I kind of missed that window for the analyst roles for for the analyst internships of corporate banks for a lot of them that are having them this summer. And I've been seeing within January and February, usually when it's supposed to be like hiring season per se, I haven't been seeing a lot of entry-level roles being posted across the banks that I've been researching, whether this be like the big four, like Citibank, Bank of America, and even the foreign banks, like whether it be like Mizuho, whether it be Deutsche Bank. What would you say? Because I'm kind of in this space where I don't want to be doing nothing right now. I want to be doing something with work that kind of projects me towards this entry-level field even, per se.
I didn't go this route, so I don't have a perfect answer, but I'll answer kind of based on my background. I think there's a few things you could do. Number one is, if you have those target banks, like, have you been spending time with alumni, talking with them and getting on their radar so that you're a name that comes up if something pops and opens up?
Personally, I went to a few events, the networking events for the company itself. I haven't seen a whole lot of alumni within my MS in finance class. I've spoken to a few, but they've also been like, verbalizing it's a little bit difficult right now with the hiring season after their quarter projections, like Q4 projections. Yeah. It's a little bit difficult. I'm a part of City Tutors. I don't know if you know that program, but City Tutors, I went to like a networking event at City, the campus, like the actual headquarters itself. So I've been trying to do network stuff like that. I've made a few friends, even, I can say, through those things, done coffee dates with them. That's what I've been trying to do right now, at least.
So it sounds like you're doing a lot of the right things. I think the other ways I'd start looking is growing the scope. Then there's got to be smaller banks, smaller analyst type roles within companies that could give you something like, because to your point, you're going to want to be growing your experience. That's the only thing I can recommend. If the windows are closed for those companies and you've kind of given yourself the position that's asked, if anything opens up, please consider me. Please refer me in. And that's kind of, everyone knows that. Then I would go broader and look at kind of any banking structure you could find. And vice versa, like if there's a company that's in fintech, is there not an analyst opportunity? Is there something tangential to that so that you're just gaining experience? And I don't know everything that exists, but obviously you're in New York City where the best of the best in that industry exists. And there should be a plethora of like, I don't see anything posted here. Is there anything coming up?
All right, I appreciate that. Thank you for the different perspective.
Yeah, Idris, that's a great question. I also just highly recommend, again, doing a plug for DCMC here, but really leaning on a career coach to help in this strategy as well. To Laura's point, it's a big pie of activity that has different slices that you're going to have to do, right? There's the application part, there's the networking part that we're talking about, there's other parts, and also even how you cultivate your networks, like. Are you updating people on what you're learning in your finance classes that people you've met throughout the semester that will remind them of your real deep interest in the functional area? And also working even on how you're communicating with individuals when you're networking and talking with them, not only about, hey, I'm looking for a role, but asking great questions. You can lean on your coach to do mock question asking and developing and how you develop those types of questions, even with an individual, to Laura's point, like when you research one individual who's working in a specific role, you could work with them about like, okay, so what are some interesting questions that I should ask this individual that will help me stand out in a positive way versus the general questions that probably the 99 other people behind me are trying to ask. So definitely lean on your coach for that, Idris. I know that you've been coming into the GCMC, so definitely keep working with them on that too.
Sounds good.
Thanks for your question. Vicky, you're next.
So my name is Vicky, and I'm a senior, undergrad senior at Baruch, double majoring in economics and political science. Thank you so much for holding the session. It was extremely helpful. And one thing that I know you talked about, Laura, is how you have such a plethora of different experiences and backgrounds in different industries. And you like mentioned how, like, you already answered the question I was going to ask about how like to really learn more about like different things you're interested in terms of doing your research and narrowing it on a target company and role, and setting up one-on-ones with alumni and getting on their radar. But I also just wanted to hear more tips about conducting research for different companies for your interview, but also for your application. Like, how much research do you think, like, is enough? I don't think, like, there'll be ever enough research that's, like, enough, but for example, like...
Yeah, so what I have kind of a pronged approach. Like, number one, you're going to want to know if they're a public company, just look at their, real quickly, you've heard this, look at their investor relations real quick, easy scan, and just, they're often talk about strategy and what they're planning for, not only the quarter, the year, they're giving you insights into where their company's at and where they're headed. That's number one. The next thing I do, quick Google search on news. Make sure you know if anything has happened dramatically. The CEO said something's happened. That's the second piece. If it's a non-public company, take a look at Crunchbase or CS Insight. Like, there's a bunch of private company startup resources out there that you can at least understand, like, their funding rounds, some of the other things that have happened to them. Then I think the fourth thing I would do is just get into the team that you're wanting to build. If you, to join, if you can find anything about their program, what they approach, anything along the lines of, like, what they're looking for, what they're speaking about, because I'm in an industry that's very outward facing, they love to talk about what they're accomplished. They're talking about their sales kickoff and posting photos. Like, there is so much information in a bank that's very different. You might not have people sharing so publicly, but they're oftentimes a VP or someone within there that chooses to use LinkedIn as a platform to network and spread and have their own thought leadership and brand. So I would look for those people. Oftentimes LinkedIn companies will repost, so you can look at their posts directly. So if I'm interviewing at UiPath, I'd look at the UiPath company LinkedIn, see what they're posting, who they're reposting, things like that. So that's what I do. If there's obviously then, if they're going to ask you about an industry specific, in my case, it was healthcare and life sciences with AI, making sure you understand whatever product service offering. And that's more for the interview itself to make sure that you can at least speak to it. So that's how I go about it. And I wouldn't do that all at once. You are breaking it up to different pieces depending on who you're speaking to and what stage you're at. But optimize it. That's what Google Alerts are for. That's what all these search items and keywords are. You could spend an hour on a person and a company and learn a lot very, very quickly enough. And you're like, I need 3 points. I need like 3 things. You do not need to remember it all. You need 3 notes. I used to be like someone that took a ton of notes on things and you can't even recall it all. So just a few comments is what you need. Justin, anything to add?
I think that's so great, especially that last part, Laura, about what are just sort of like the top 3 things. I mean, it's so, so important because, Vicky, to your point, the research can be never ending. And if you have to walk away with 3 things you can remember, to Laura's point, that's such a great tip.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the question, Vicky. Christopher, you're next.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. So my name is Christopher Fanasigi, and I'm a master's student at Baruch, and also currently I hold a position as a business analyst, which is informatics at Weill Cornell. My question is very technology and technical heavy. So what I've noticed recently is that in LinkedIn or in Indeed, very recent posting, job postings have a lot of applicants right away, like within the hour, they have over 200.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking, as an analyst, I guess, are there any softwares that, you know, agencies use to auto-submit on behalf of applicants? Because I imagine, especially for like recent grad students or want to intern and stuff like that, you're going to end up at the bottom of the pile, essentially, if that happens, right? And then on top of that, how, like, the measurables in resume, like, how much of that is an impact factor in terms of there's an ATS software? Like, how much does it filter through that measurables that you have? 15% increasing in 15% efficiency, for example. Many of us don't even, or many of the students that I've met don't have that sort of experience. They don't work at existing corporate companies to even have some sort of KPIs to measure. Some of them are only starting from a like smaller job, so they don't have those type of things that they could add into their resume. So it's technology and technical heavy stuff that I'm asking, because it's not like I was looking for a job, but I was just practicing to see what's out there on LinkedIn and Indeed, you know, because I already have a full-time position, but something I could probably advise people that I talk to sometimes.
Yeah. So number one, I think that goes back to the point about just blanket applying. Mm-hmm. I struggle with this one because your background almost needs to match those keywords, and you're going to look. So if you look at a job the actual description of the role, it's based on hierarchy, to your point of the most important things are the top 4 points, right? Top 5 points. Those, like, and then there's the must haves and the nice to haves. And so the system auto rejection, I would say, is based on, kind of the decisions by the company and the recruiter and hiring manager. But like, for example, I wasn't even managing it, but I would have someone, my recruiter would be like, I'm like, give me 10 profiles. I'll go through them real quick. I'll pick three out to talk to. Boom, let's go. So to your point, the hundreds of applicants, unless you're matching that, that's why the networking, I come back into like, if there's, you know, certain confidence of like which companies, it's the same internships, it's the same thing every year, or entry level positions, that's where you have to target that process from a student standpoint. And then I had my resume targeted for different types of things. Like I would have if you want to be an analyst, for example, I had my analyst, and then I'd have my fintech analyst, like resume. I'd have a couple things, and you do need to match the language of that industry and apply it. So if I'm hiring, for example, for customer success, I'm looking for people that tangentially have managed customers, can know how to problem solve, these types of things. They don't have to have the direct experience. So it's a difficult thing to answer, because part of me is to actually get a recruiter to pull you out of a pile is very difficult without any connection, without anything there.
Yeah, no, I agree, because my job now is through a referral process. So I felt lucky with that. Yes, it's a really important thing to know.
And I don't know if software that optimizes, because once again, you don't want to blanket send your resume to all these opportunities, exactly, because then it's going to be rejected because you didn't tailor it at all. And that's where I go back focusing and slowing down. You do not need to mass apply, mass network. It's strategic in how you go about, here are my targets, here are my roles. And if you have trouble limiting, just be like, for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to focus on these three companies, or 3 weeks, month, whatever that is, just narrow it. And if once you start like getting one company's not working and one role's not working, go to the next, fill in that bucket. Like as if you're having your own set of candidates is the best way to put it, because you can't do it all and cater to it all without things going kind of rejecting yourself, almost is the best way to put it.
Yeah. In follow up, in terms of maximizing a career, like leveraging how you can elevate yourself, would you recommend moving on to a company or staying within the same company but taking on a higher up role, like say from an entry level to a mid level to a senior level? Would you rather do that by moving to a different company because there might be higher pay, for example, or stay within the same company. Historically, they know you, so most likely you will get hired. So there is that pro and con based on your experience. What would you suggest that could optimize both, opportunity for, let's say, for someone, at the same time, security for that person as well?
Yeah, I would say that this is unfortunately, it depends on a case-by-case basis. I think there is a lot to be said about staying and having the winds change within your company. Quarter to quarter, things will change. Year over year, things will change. And being that the fact that I've been in the tech industry, people move so fast for the grass is greener, for that next 20K, 30K, like, there's a reason to do that. A lot of times when you do stay, the next generations and waves of candidates and people that come in the company, sometimes there's more money, the pay gets better, the equity, the bonus structure gets better, and you're stuck getting your 10%, 6% increase year over year. You can't get there's no way for them to match you. I've had scenarios where I found out people that became a part of my team, had better bonuses from me, had better comp structure. Like, that is a hard reality, and that's because I'd been there a while. So I would have to say that it's important to have the conversation and be transparent. If you want something that has growth, talk to your management. They can't always come in, and it can't always happen, and sometimes you're skipped over, but be open about what you want. Because nothing's worse than not knowing as a manager what you want and then not being able to kind of make that happen. And I think I go back to sponsorship. I'm sure you've heard of sponsorship. It's not enough to have a mentor. You have someone pushing you along with an organization and pulling you up that has credibility and influence within the company to make that happen. I think there are times to leave and move on. I think there are times to stay. And I would say the number one thing is if you have a great manager, you have a great sponsor, and you have a healthy team, there's nothing better than working for someone who's invested in you. There is nothing better. And I think the same goes when I have a great team and I'm helping their careers along. I'm happy when they grow within the company. I'm also happy when they've taken what they've done and they move on to their next journey. And when you have people around you, we've all worked for and worked with people that may not have felt good, may not have treated people well, and that goes a really long, long way. So I think take the assessment of yourself, take the assessment for the company, and decide what's best. But take your time, because you can't obviously take it back once you're like, and I don't recommend negotiating against a company. I personally haven't done it, but people do that. And I think it leaves a bad taste for everybody that you have to go out and get another job offer to negotiate to get what you want within a company. That's very difficult to do. And I don't think anyone feels good, even if you get the result you want.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Laura. Let's do one last question. Fantastic. Thank you. Nicholas, over to you.
Thank you, Laura, so much. The presentation is very informative. So my name is Nicholas. I'm an MS in finance student here at Brook, and I'm also a career changer. I was a neuroscience major in undergrad. So I feel like, as a lot of us here are, changing careers and pursuing a master's degree at Brook, the main thing is to try and get experience, no matter if it's an internship, whatever. And I feel like a lot of the entry-level internships that I come across are often tailored towards undergraduate students. And it will often say in the description, like, undergraduate students in junior year of study or something like that. And I'm honestly still applied to some of those roles, even though I'm a graduate student. So I'd love to hear your opinion regarding that, if they kind of would automatically disqualify you based off of that.
I don't know. Maybe this is a question for Justin, because I actually haven't experienced that, and I don't know what if they're saying in the, you know, opportunity that they only want undergraduate students.
Yeah. When some of the roles speak specifically for undergrads, they are oftentimes just looking for undergrads. And then there's always, unfortunately, Nicholas, there's always the exceptions that end up happening. And so oftentimes we, you know, sometimes suggest that for applications that you really feel strongly about, try to find somebody who might be able to refer you so that that exception can potentially happen. And if something's happening on campus with a firm, you can certainly come and speak with a recruiter and talk with them and find out, you know, that in the end, maybe an exception can happen. But there's no one answer to that question. And we find actually that when we give one answer, we can find examples of the exact opposite happening. So.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Laura, so we're at time. Everybody, thank you so much for the questions. And for the perspectives, or I'm going to give you the mic just for final thoughts to share before we end this podcast.
Thank you so much. Absolutely feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Definitely send me a note, though, with it so I know kind of context of what you're looking for, what you're doing. But take advantage. Brooke has an amazing, amazing alumni network from full-time and part-time. So take advantage of that. And I know it's difficult, but you all have great stuff to offer companies. And so good luck to you all. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Laura. And thanks, everyone, for being here. Until next time, take care.
Thanks, listeners, for tuning into the GCMC podcast, where we look to get off-the-record thoughts and perspectives from individuals who have been hiring managers and in hiring positions in their careers. The GCMC is here for Zicklin MBA and MS students and alumni for their careers wherever they are, so be sure to stay in touch with us.